It is the new millennium, and we are getting jiggy with it. Welcome back to The Inverted Castle, a Metroidvania enthusiast podcast. I'm your barely bearable host, Eric Fox, and backing me up from my backpack, it's my wickedly talented wingman, Tom Blight.
Hey, fuck you, buddy!
I don't know, but this is what I imagine Kazooie is like.
I mean, Kazooie's actually like, rah, 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 rah. Yeah, but true. Anyway... We are, of course, discussing this week Banjo-Tooie, Rareware's follow-up to the 1998 Banjo-Kazooie, and also a game that they managed to, like, wrangle themselves in from the insanity that they were clearly under when they made DK64. We started with a sequel, not sure how that panned out, but yeah, this is a collect-a-thon by basically the inventors of the genre.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we have kind of maintained a habit of not starting with a sequel, with the exception of Metroid Dread. I guess also Symphony of the Night.
Yeah, Metroid Dread was a story sequel, but for like Symphony and Metroid Prime, they kind of are unstuck in canon enough that it doesn't really matter, especially with Symphony being a sequel to a not Metroidvania.
And I mean, I guess that's a thing that we should get into right away. I would say Banjo Kazooie, the first one, is probably definitely not a Metroidvania by most people's definitions. Actually, it's been a while, but if I recall, it is heavily level-based. Although, now that I'm thinking of it, I think I'm combining it with Mario 64, because I was like, okay, so you use the jiggies to make a painting and then you jump into the painting? I was like, no, that's Mario, isn't it?
It's, well, Mario doesn't use jiggies, thankfully,
well, yes.
But, yeah, you jump into paintings as Mario, but you unlock the doors with stars. This one, you make paintings with jiggies to unlock doors elsewhere. Same as in Banjo-Kazooie. That one was more strictly level-based, and there wasn't any way to get from one level to the another, except by just, you know, going through the overworld and going to the next level. Whereas in this one has a bit of that, but it's mostly, I'm going to say, other stuff.
Yeah. And I mean,
this game has a lot of stuff.
I don't know. I kind of waffle about that, like, hub level, like, overworld definition type thing. As we've been doing this podcast, I feel more and more like what makes something a Metroidvania is if it feels like a Metroidvania, like if it feels like there's a decent focus on exploration.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, we talked initially about Zelda not really being one. And now I'm like, I don't know. I might say Zelda is one. I feel like saying that the dungeons are different two sections of Super Metroid that just happen to be connected by only one entrance, and that one entrance is also the one exit.
Yeah.
Feels a little arbitrary to me.
I think treating Metroidvania as like a structural definition is very difficult, whereas really what we care about is the experiential aspect of it, like how it's presented and how you actually engage with exploration in one game versus, say, this one, Banjo-Tooie, which we should probably actually describe more in depth of what it's like for the, I don't know, two people on Earth who don't know.
That's fair.
So it's mostly a platformer in that you run around a three-dimensional space, and you can jump, hover, glide, a whole bunch of different things, and you get more and more abilities to interact with things, like shooting different eggs, jumping higher. In this one, Bangus and Kazangus can separate and act independently, but for the most part, you're going to eight variously themed levels, each with just a cornucopia of different challenges and activities for you to get the MacGuffin of the series, which is the jigsaw pieces, or jiggies. And when you get an arbitrary number of them, you can unlock the next world. And the, like, overworld of sorts in between all these levels mostly just serve as really minor hubs. There's not a whole lot to do within them, other than maybe pick up another egg ability or something.
Yeah, there's, like, a very minor amount of ability gating that happens in those hub worlds.
Yeah, it's mostly like if you just get one major ability from the most recent world you just went to, you can get to the next one, no problem. As long as you can pay the jiggy toll.
Yeah.
Yeah. Story-wise, this one pops off just like 2 years after the events of the first one. You beat the bad witch Gruntilda, and she's under a rock and is now a skeleton. But her her heretofore unmentioned sisters show up and like, okay, up the rock. Gruntilda ices your good friend Bottles the Mole. Like, he's for real dead, but also it's a kid's game, so he'll get better later, don't worry. And then you just kind of chase her and her giant drill tank through the hub worlds and basically go to all the various themed dimensions. And, like, story cuts off until the very end where you play a game show and then finally you beat her in her tank.
And the big thing for me is just how arbitrary the things to do to get a Jiggy are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just comparing it to its contemporary Mario 64, I felt like, maybe it's just me, but I felt like Mario felt more cohesive.
I think it's just, it didn't have as, like, explicit of, like, characters and a world so much as these are, like, levels with a, like, this is a video game-ass video game level, whereas Banjo-Tooie generally has something it's trying to, like, emulate, like, oh, this is, like, a actual theme park, or it's a gold mine, or it's just the concept of being under the sea.
That's true. There is a little more, like, this is conceivably a place people actually live in Banjo-Tooie, which is not a thing in Mario, and yet...
Yeah, you can talk to the pink ba-bombs, and they'll be like, bleh, 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 and open the cannon for you. It's a game that's more pure, I guess, whereas this one likes to luxuriate in its sense of humor and style, which, this game has aged poorly in every sense that can mean. Like, not only is this an N64 game for back, you know, when that's some muddy textures and polygons you can count on your hand, but also some of these characters are, I would say, culturally flippant. Especially the voodoo man Mumbo Jumbo, or the Native American woman Humba Wumba.
That's fair.
I think at one point the game actually does refer to her as an Indian, so that was fun. But don't worry, it also refers to people as punters, because it's British, so... Who knows, maybe they just don't have the same, or didn't have the same...
Look, British people don't need to understand any historical hurt that they might have done to Native Americans.
Yeah, no, that was Americans. We just did the colonialism before then.
Yep, definitely didn't start any of it.
You know, the records from that era are spotty at best.
Yeah, right? Especially, I don't know, my wife looked up when Mumbo was casting one of his spells, and she was just like, well, that's offensive.
It's unfortunate, but it's also not like... The humor of this game is pretty much entirely insult-based, and a lot of it's just referring to characters with some sort of, is it a slur? If it's, like, something about their species?
It probably is some kind of weird animal slur.
Probably. Because they do that constantly, either that or body weight is just, like, the two go-tos, which I'm sure as a kid, I'm sure I was... totally fine with it, but I was also 10, and now it's just like the appeal of the things that aren't gameplay has kind of just disappeared. And so, like, even when it's not just like troubling my delicate sensibilities, it's also just I'm an adult man, and I can't really blame the game for not appealing to me when it's clearly a toy.
Yes, I Eric Adultman am not enjoying this video game.
I like business.
I'm definitely not three kids in a trench coat.
But yeah, so that's kind of a lot of the vibe the game gives off, and it's not great.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, this is also the same people who made Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Yeah, it shows. It definitely shows.
Which might actually age better than this. I don't know, it's been a while since I played.
Okay, Tom, I love you, and I respect you, but if you suggest Conker's Bad Fur Day for our next game, I'm quitting the podcast.
No.
I've this was a mistake on my part. I will admit that. Please, you'd have to play it too.
Hey, I have fond memories of Conker's Bad Fur Day. I played it way too young to be playing a rated M game.
Yeah, I had fond memories of this game in particular, and well, I kind of wish I had let that particular genie lie. Regardless, Bebop and Rocksteady kind of don't really have characters, like, outside of just, like, Banjo being, like, kind of okay to help, and Kazooie just insulting every person she meets. And
yeah,
the exact nature of the relationship is never really explored. I didn't check the tags on AO3, but I'm sure it's not something I want to get into.
Yeah, I mean, they are a very comfortable pair, like, even when they're playing poker in the beginning. It's not like Banjo and Kazooie are playing against each other, as you know, would think that people might do. No, Kazooie is just, like, riding in his backpack, playing from his shoulder.
She's definitely someone he has to constantly apologize for, though.
Yes. I don't know.
She seemed almost gleeful in telling Bottles' family, yeah, dude, your dad's dead.
I mean,
sucks to suck.
Yeah, I've never played Nuts and Bolts. Maybe they go into a flashback and have a thing where they explain how they met. I don't know. No, that seems like an awful thing to do. Don't do that.
Yeah, no, what I definitely don't need is expanded lore. I just thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah. It's definitely just a, like, here's an odd couple. Don't think of it too hard about it. Also, it's kind of funny how, like, even, like, once you get the split up power, it seems like the only thing that they consider notable about Banjo is that he has a backpack.
Every ability he gets is, oh, well, your backpack's free now. Let's see what you can do with that.
Yeah, I guess maybe they had trouble coming up with excuses of why you couldn't use it when you have Kazooie otherwise. I don't know.
This game also kind of, like, suffers from, you had a lot of abilities from the first game that you didn't have a bag of spilling for this one. That's a Metroidvania trope that this one doesn't follow through. Is starting from Tui, like, the very first time I booted it up was kind of overwhelming of all the things you can do from the jump, and all the abilities that you get in this game kind of seem to, if not weirdly missing from the first game, or just insanely specific.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't find it too bad. The only one that I kept forgetting that existed from the original set is the Beak Bash. And I'd get to a button and I'd be like, how do I do this again? Oh, right,
Oh, yeah. Is it the one where you crouch and just forward, like, shoulder check with the beak?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes there are just switches on a wall that you can press, but if you forgot, there's no tutorial for the first game outside of or there's no one to say anything past the tutorial area.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, none of that's too bad. I guess the rare times when you have to use
rare
the invincibility, if you don't remember about it, it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, but there's also, like, a bunch of feather power ups which, if you don't forget, like, what the golden feathers are for, then, like, at least those are kind of a reminder that, oh, you can just not take damage for a while. But yeah, it's a game that was definitely assumed familiarity with the first game.
Although they really could have used a move list in the pause menu.
Uh-huh.
As an aside, I was playing the Xbox Live version, which is sort of a remaster.
Yes, there are a couple of significant changes, but mostly it's the same game. I played the, quote, N64, end quote, version, which was the one from my youth at the very least, and controlled like ass, but I'm not sure how your experience was.
The camera was still pretty awful. I imagine the N64 was probably worse with the camera.
Probably? Like, did you still have to, like, rely on buttons to control it?
It controlled using the right stick, but it felt like it was just emulating the C buttons, if I had to guess. I don't know. It didn't feel natural.
That's probably the case, but what really killed me was aiming. You can aim eggs while airborne or under the sea.
Oh, yeah.
And targeting with that was, with that kind of sensitivity, try as I might, could not get it to function in a way that ever felt good.
That might have been a little easier for me, actually, because that did have a fair amount of flexibility of movement. I just wish it wasn't, like, GoldenEye style, even in the Xbox Live version. I wish they had just made it move the entire screen instead.
Unfortunately, these are the people who made GoldenEye, and they're sticking to their guns
yes,
in more ways than one.
Speaking of GoldenEye, actually, I have multiple things I wanted to But yeah, GoldenEye first, I guess.
Sure.
So there are first-person perspective sections of this game where Banjo takes Kazooie out of the backpack and uses her like a gun.
Holds her like a rifle, yeah.
I'm pretty sure those are the actual maps from GoldenEye's multiplayer.
I was going to say, that every section that you do that in feels like a recycled like GoldenEye or Perfect Dark Deathmatch map. Just like how blocky and like labyrinthine it is, just weird slants to like the second level. And man, did you enjoy them?
No, I did not. And actually, I had a surprising amount of trouble with the one with the clangers.
One with the clangers. Oh, when you have to like shoot the like grates with,
yes,
with the like the dirt detritus crap on them.
Yes.
Yeah. It technically, yeah, they technically make a sound, but only when you're pretty close. And there's so many of them. It's just like you're walking through like a very tight labyrinth, first person mode with not great aiming controls, and just trying to find all of these within a time limit. Okay, yeah, this is one of many situations where having a save state button,
fair,
basically made it so that I didn't give up the game.
I had to make a couple runs at that. I think it turned out that I kept missing. There's one that is very high compared to,
yeah, man,
the entrance of the room that you find it in. I just had to figure out, oh, you need to actually just look up at the ceiling.
You need to look up because it's not in your field of view. You need to just hear the sound, look up, and all while you're already under a very strict time limit. Like, this game's kind of weird about difficulty where it feels like every time it's hard, it's because of jank.
Yeah, that's fair.
In particular, a couple of boss encounters, again, with the aiming controls of, you need to hit a whole bunch of very specific parts of this thing's body while you're swimming or flying, so you're already a moving target, or you're moving, it's moving, hit these things with this, It wasn't hard, I was never in danger of dying, it just took a while, and was frustrating.
I did die once or twice to a boss, and I was like, eh, whatever. But that reminds me, speaking of the flying and swimming, that's my other weird anecdote. So it turns out that I am a person who has a very weird set of control needs.
Aha! Uh-huh.
I need, when you are piloting someone in third person in, mm-hmm, flying or swimming, I need, oh god, now I need to remember the way that this works. I need forward, pushing forward on the stick to push you down.
Yep. I believe this is inverted controls.
But if you go to first person, I need pushing forward on the stick to point you up.
So when you're in first person, you want your control to move the cursor around the screen. Whereas if you're in third person, you're more or less controlling a theoretical camera that's anchored to your character. So when you move up, the camera moves up. And you face down.
I suppose. Yeah.
This is how, like, I'm the same way. Like, I play all of the Dark Souls games with inverted camera controls.
The issue here is that this is the opposite ways. So, anytime I go into first person, I have to then,
yeah,
pause, switch the inversion so that I can aim properly in first person.
This game fucks you two ways.
So, I just thought it was a funny problem for me to have, of Tom's weird saga with having problems with controls that nobody should reasonably have. I can't just fly around and then go into first person and then come out of first person, because those should be two different things in my brain.
Yep.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, you can't change the inversion of the controls as far as I'm aware.
Oh, in the Xbox Live one, you can.
You can? Oh, boy.
But there is only one setting.
Yeah, so I don't think I ever tried, because for me, I need the inversion to be both on or both off, and I'm pretty sure when I was playing it, I realized that, it's inverted vertically, but not horizontally.
Oh.
So if you tilt right, the cursor goes to the right, and if you tilt down, it goes up.
Yeah, the Xbox One only has invert Y. Apparently they didn't feel it necessary to put it in an invert X.
It was a different time. They didn't realize that they had like mutants like us playing their games. I guess.
I don't actually know when the Xbox One was released, but it was probably after Halo. I'm willing to bet on that.
Yeah, but they need that was more of a case where they need to respect the original intention, which was to ignore us. It was a very pointed ignorance.
Yes, clearly.
But yeah, this game has a lot of different game modes in it. We're talking about like your genre, how this one technically, like when you're like moving through the platforming levels, there is exploration. There are things in prior levels that you can only get with abilities you get later. Like you need to be able to use this like spring shoes in order to get something in like the second level or something like that. But because progression is not so much linear but arbitrary, it doesn't really matter where you get the jiggies from as long as you hit that requisite amount. It doesn't feel like you're breaking off of a sequence or not. So like that's one of the ways that this game has like a lot of the ingredients of a Metroidvania, but what they've cooked is something completely different. Like they've somehow like if you allow me to really torture a metaphor for a second, imagine Metroidvania as like a chicken sandwich, right?
Okay.
And so what they've done here is made chicken noodle soup, and you can have like bread on the side. But the soup is fairly thin. It technically has chicken. You know, you can add some bread if you want. But really, it's like they took everything else in their fridge and dumped that also into the soup. And it's just chunky as all hell. And by chunky, I mean this game is also at least 50% Mario Party.
Yeah, there's a lot of minigames.
It's like platforming is kind of just the connective tissue between going from various single-player Mario Party games, all of which generally have the same point system of the blue ones are 3, green ones are 2, red ones are 1, whatever those ones are, which are either hoops you jump through, things you shoot, other things you shoot, goals to score, things to collect, things to move from one place to another. It's each level has like at least 2 of that specific genre of minigame. A lot of them have ones where you have to do 3 difficulties in a row, like playing that dumb soccer game in the first level.
Oh yeah, which comes back.
They get to recycle that one a little bit. There's a bunch of like just more generic shooting galleries where you're on locked into place and shooting targets. Sometimes you're not locked into place. It's a lot of what you're doing is not platforming, even though a lot of what you're doing between those times is kind of not particularly difficult platforming.
Yeah, platforming is really not very much of a focus in this game.
No, it's kind of just how you get around, and it's not interesting enough, and it's also like levels are a little too big when you're like, you know, you need to get to the certain thing with either like as Banjo or Kazooie or Mumbo or the transformation that each level has. And so it's just like, okay, back to the place where I can get the right form. Okay, now let's hike on over. There's so much friction.
Yeah.
In between the stuff that's actually kind of fun in these toy boxes that it really made me resent having to play this. Because what I remember more than all of these individual things to get your jiggies is, all right, climbing the mountain again. Okay, which warp pad is closest, stuff like that.
Yeah, in particular with some of the transformations, I don't know, there were times when I just hadn't found all the places I needed the transformation yet, or maybe it was, at least in the case of Witchy World,
mm-hmm.
there were places that you would need the transformation past something that you needed to unlock, which I think was with the transformation in that case, where
yeah.
you need to use the cash van, which is probably the most arbitrary a transformation ever gets, to pay
pretty much, yeah.
the fee to enter a section. And then I went back at that point being like, oh, that was all of the
cool.
things that I knew about. And then came back and was like, oh, goddammit, there's another cash van thing past this.
Yeah, you can usually make a pass, but sometimes, like, especially when in this game you can control Mumbo, but you just basically take him to a pad to do the thing. Usually you can just do all of those at once, but sometimes they either have a timer or it's actually functions more like a switch. So anytime you have to come back and do it, if you either failed or now you need the other version, back to Mumbo's hut, switch to Mumbo. Now Mumbo's this slow guy who, like, at first it's kind of exciting, like, oh, another new character way to play. Nah, he just kind of sucks.
Yeah, I don't know. And there's not really, like, there are potentials there to make for interesting traversal when you're limited, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't have this thing. Now the traversal is interesting. And it's mostly just not.
It's the most it ever gets is you need to unlock a path somehow first that allows it, or you just get the ability for that character, Bangus or Kazangus, to get that far. And then it's more or less you did it. You do the ability and get your goodie.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is awful if you transformed into the character, reached the point of where you're stuck, and you're like, oh, now I have to go back and find out how to open this thing and then do this all again.
And if you split up, then you're like, okay, well, now I need to get the gang back together. So you go back to where you split up. It's just a lot of inconveniences that pile up when you're trying to just, you know, kind of fun around. And when you're a kid, you're more forgiving of this because just the act of playing a video game is good enough and you have infinite time. But I'm a busy, important adult with many important things to do.
Yeah.
Like play other video games, which I would have liked to have done.
Majora's Mask was definitely the better handling of this.
Majora's Mask, a game famous for making you wait for long arbitrary periods of time to get the goodies, did it better than this one.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's because you were already waiting for another thing, they were like, you just make this part instantaneous or whatever, right?
Whatever the reason was, it's a infinitely better designed game, and that's not just because it's my favorite one, you know, it could be anything.
Yes.
Objectively perfect game.
That's also a good place to segue. Majora's Mask also came out in the year 2000.
Oh, man.
Which is when Banjo-Tooie released. I'm not just talking about the year 2000 randomly.
No. We're in the context dimension, my dude. My favorite segment. Let's go.
Other top-rated games released that year. Chrono Cross.
Oh, man.
Deus Ex, the first one.
Okay.
Final Fantasy IX.
Throwback.
Yeah, also it's weird that Chrono Cross and Final Fantasy IX are released in the same year, and this is, I guess, a time when Square was still just, you know, making multiple RPG hits.
A year instead of making one, like, every five?
Yeah. The Sims, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2.
Okay, that's the best one, potentially.
Yeah, Medieval 2.
You want to take another one at that? Run at that?
I guess it's supposed to be medieval, but it's like med.
Medieval. I don't know. It's the Skull Man on the box.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even sure what genre that is. Is it a collectathon-ish or is it just action platforming?
You know, I only ever saw commercials for it and never played it myself.
Imagine if it was a Metroidvania that we just never knew.
And I'm only getting results for Total War when I'm looking it up.
You can't really capitalize the E and make Google understand.
Yep. That's
probably fine.
Pokemon Yellow.
Really? I thought that was earlier.
Metropolis Street Racer.
Okay, now that no one's heard of that game.
Yeah, I have no idea what that game is.
Is that based on the movie Metropolis?
I doubt it.
The horrible movie from like the 20s or something? Finally getting a video game adaptation?
It was a Dreamcast Racing. Apparently it's actually the first entry in Project Gotham Racing.
Okay, that's why it's notable, I guess, although that's also kind of a dead series.
Yeah, I mean, it won a Game of the Year award.
Okay, it was Game of some year.
Yeah, Shenmue, I think is actually the correct way to say it.
Speaking of games with friction.
Yeah, I still have to finish Shenmue 3. But
you don't have to do anything. I'll practice self-care, my friend.
I do not believe it wraps up the series. I'm pretty sure it still just is like, yep, this was like 45 minutes of this character's life. Play the next 17 games, which we're totally going to make someday.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. Right around the corner. Maybe it's in the anime.
Metal Gear Solid Ghost Babel?
Probably Babel. That's how I usually hear the tower pronounced. I think that one's the the Game Boy Color pseudo canon.
It is
Metal Gear game.
Diablo 2.
Man.
Phantasy Star Online.
A lot of legendary sequels in this.
Yeah. Dragon Quest 7.
Right.
Which I was not paying attention to Dragon Quest in this era.
Well, I mean, it had been gone from North America since 4, I believe.
That's fair. I think 8 is the first one that I start recognizing again.
It is also the first one where they started calling it Dragon Quest over here as well. It was Dragon Warrior before then.
Grandia 2.
I never played that one. I played Grandia. Never 2.
Grandia's 2 is pretty good. It's probably a little, what's the word? I don't know, edgelordy now.
Yay!
It's very much the church is evil.
Okay, but how is that different from most JRPGs?
It's really heavy on the church is evil.
Okay.
Like, that's the entire thing of the game. But it's probably the best one in the franchise, although I have not actually played Grandia 1.
It has a fun dub, I'll tell you that much.
And Pokemon Stadium.
Also a game with, let's say, connectivity features that Banjo-Tooie, unfortunately, had to scrap.
The stop and swap.
The stop and swap mechanic. One of the reasons that I assume you did not get 100% in this game.
That is fair. I did not do the stop and swap because I did not also go and buy Banjo-Kazooie on Xbox Live Arcade and play enough of that to get the stop and swap stuff.
Yeah. So, for those not in the know, when Banjo-Kazooie released, if you got the 100% like ending, its cutscene would basically did a called shot on Banjo-Tooie 1 existing 2 having this stop and swap technology where there are certain like secret areas in Kazooie where if you went there, you'd get an item that would be used in Tooie. The idea behind this was that you'd stop playing Kazooie, quickly switch to Tooie, and the RAM in the N64 would just stick around long enough that it would be able to read it in Tooie. But unfortunately, the N64, I think, went under a hardware revision, and what used to be a 30-second window turned into a 3-second window, give or take. And so they had to scrap that entirely until Paper Mario speedrunners found it years later. But that's a whole other story. Look it up.
Interesting.
Yeah. Tooie, the N64 release, having scrapped that, instead added a couple of, like, off-to-the-side cave areas or something where there'd be a Banjo-Kazooie cartridge enemy, and if you killed it, then the item would pop out, like, haha, you're still getting it out of that game. One of which is the Ice Key, which unlocks a creature collectible that you then trade to Humble Wumba to semi-permanently transform Kazooie into a dragon. That was kind of the major unlock from the whole stop and swap thing was the Ice Key, which was in a level in Kazooie, but now is just randomly in the world.
Yeah, they're not that much more interesting in the Live Arcade versions. Instead, it just gives you an item that pertains to the other game. So I don't actually know what the bronze, gold, and silver eggs do in Banjo-Kazooie, but the other way is... Yeah, you collect the Ice Key in Banjo-Kazooie, and it will modify your Banjo-Tooie save.
Right, yeah. Basically, they did a semi-make-good on the re-release on an XBLA.
Yeah.
But, fortunately, unless you want to play two whole games, you're not getting 100%. I didn't either, but that's mostly because, one, it's not changing my opinion of the game, at least not in the positive direction, and two, there actually is no extra thing for getting 100%. There's no extra cutscene, no acknowledgement. It's just do it if you want to, which is unfortunate, but also something I really appreciated once I found out just for my own personal sanity. But yeah, like even though you don't need to get 100%, just beating the game, you need to do quite a bit of it still. Like I think the minimum is 70 out of 90 jiggies.
Yeah.
If you just want to see credits, it's 55, which is a fun little goof they do, where if you get to 55, you get to do, in this game's little quiz game, I think it's like Tower of Terror or something like that, but it's like, yeah, Banjo versus Grunty's two sisters in a quiz game, where you buzz in and try and get the most points about, like, really specific minutia of the game, it's cute. It's not as fun as the, or at least not as fun as how I remember the board game was in Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do that and the sisters are dead and you do the whole reverse life suck machine to revive your buds.
I was actually really bad at the quiz show. I don't know. Apparently I wasn't paying attention, or I'm just really bad at counting things. Because there's a number of times where it just like puts something up and it's like, hey, did you count random dumb thing? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, it'll show you like a scene, like just from a level, but it doesn't tell you what you're really supposed to be paying attention to until after it jumps back. It's a very silly, but also like knowingly arbitrary and mean quiz. I think if I didn't have save states, I would have had to have done this from the beginning several times.
Thankfully, if you pass the first round, you do not have to redo the first round when you fail the second round.
That's incredibly kind of them.
But I think it took me 4 attempts total. So basically, like, I failed each round once before succeeding it. just a pain because, like, at the point that you know that you've lost, you either reset the game or you have to wait out the timer.
And I imagine if you reset the game from round 2, you gotta do round 1 again.
That I don't know. I didn't bother resetting.
But yeah, like, you basically resolve the plot after this. And it's just like, well, we still gotta beat the final boss. And then you go up there and just like, yeah, get 15 more jiggies to just get closure, I guess, on Bone Witch.
Yeah, I experienced it very differently because I wasn't going everywhere the moment that I had access to it. It was just, yep, do that, okay, walk upstairs, fight the boss. This was a weirdly, like, arbitrary split between things.
Yeah, yeah, I was kind of at that point, had a hankering to, like, finish the game up, so, like, the last 2 levels, I kind of just got the minimum requirement to get to the next level. Although Cloud Cuckoo Land was, like, probably my favorite zone, just for how quickly it got to giving you jiggies.
It's interesting. I don't know. I struggled a lot with figuring out and understanding its layout for a while.
I got the transformation pretty quick, and having a bee that can just fly infinitely forever. Basically, yeah, like solving how there's a whole bunch of islands surrounding one central mountain, and inside the mountain is just a really tall cave, and then that's basically it.
Oh, I mean, that part was fine. The part where that I kept screwing up on is like mapping that back to, okay, now I'm inside as Mumbo or Banjo, and I need to know what doors I can go through and actually access things when I can't just arbitrarily fly everywhere because I'm spending too much time as only Kazooie or something.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, eventually I learned like a bit of the color coding on the exits to the mountain.
Yes.
Sort of corresponded to things a bit better. But like this was more or less a first impressions type thing, because after Hailfire Peaks, which kind of took a minute with its 2 discrete hot and cold zones to kind of get to any kind of progression, it was nice to like almost instantly pop down and be like, okay, I got the bee plant jiggy, hell yeah. And then the Mario Party minigame of Mash A with Canary Mary.
Yeah, I did not enjoy that one. The first 2 was like, okay, whatever. This was not hard. But these ones were actually somewhat hard, and apparently I'm not the best masher, so I had to look up how to mash better on the internet.
And you learned, which technique was it?
The answer is use a spoon. Or you can also just use your fingernails. But it's like, essentially, rather than trying to press it as much as you can, you are, imagine you're scratching off a scratch card and go across the button.
Okay, I still have my skills, thankfully, from Mario Party, where you just kind of tense up your arm a lot and just kind of like, just get the shakes enough. Like, intentionally, like,
intentionally induced tremors.
Essentially, yeah. Like, just start vibrating a little bit with your muscles all tense, and it worked, but also after the first one, like, you can optionally get a bonus goodie that's not related to progression, just a Cheeto page. And I was just like, nah, I'm good. I just kind of left her there. But this game, as far as being a collectathon, is weirdly, like, a couple steps forward, but also, like, a little step sideways, almost. in terms of how it changed things from Kazooie, at least. Where, so, for one thing...
What? Okay, go on.
Yeah, no, I'm going to explain what I mean by that right now, and how it the number of things you're collecting has changed, whereas in the first game, all notes were individual, and you need to collect 100 of them, whereas in this game, they only come in, like, little packages of 5 or 20, so there's less of them to collect, right?
Yeah.
But... part of what made them kind of good in the first game was that they'd kind of just, like, lead you on a trail through the level. And you'd always be able to see, like, okay, I haven't been there yet kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas because there aren't as many in levels that are much bigger, it felt, like, a lot more easier for me to, like, kind of lose track of where I was or feel like I'm just kind of wandering arbitrarily and not really having that, like, breadcrumb trail.
I mean, it happened a little bit, like, the breadcrumb trail thing. There's definitely some that are signposted, although I think more towards the end of the game made me feel like that rather than the beginning, which is kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it would have been more important to do at the beginning of the game.
You'd think, huh? And I say this is kind of still like a step sideways because, again, one of the problems I have with this game is spending time with it. And the idea of collecting 100 of something just kind of fills me with dread.
Mm.
Another aspect is that this game doesn't have lives anymore.
Wait, oh yeah, the original had lives?
The original had lives, and if you ran out, you got a game over. This one got rid of that, but as a consequence, it kind of turned any live loss into a game over.
Yeah. This is the dumbest thing about that, speaking of which. In Cloud Cuckoo Land, for some reason, I was just really failing at walking straight towards the blue Mumbo Skull.
Oh no.
And away from it too. I'm pretty sure I fell at that particular spot something like 4 times.
And there's not like a warp pad to that spot. Like you can go back into inside the mountain, I guess?
Yeah.
And walk from there, but yeah, every time you have to suffer the game over and then start back at the beginning of the world.
Yeah, it just kept happening, I don't know.
There's that, there is this place in the gold mine which has like kind of like these walkways you have to kind of power through and shoot generators to light the path ahead. Where if you fall through that, then you're back to the start of the level and have to remember which cave that was in.
Yeah, I didn't find that too bad. I did actually fall on the other one, the part where you have to hold down a light switch with Banjo and then explore it with Kazooie.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where, like, the fact that it happened once was just so galling, and it made me just fire off the quick save state key pretty much for the rest of the playthrough.
Yeah, that's fair. I actually, for the longest time, didn't figure out that the generators took the fire eggs. And I was like, so when do I get the thing that deals with this? And just kept going. And then at some point I was like, I guess I should just fire every type of egg at it? I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's how it happened to me too. I went there first and decided, like, oh, I guess I can't do this yet. Yeah, at the very least, nothing prevents you from getting all of the ability upgrades the first time you go to a level, unless it's Grunty Industries and you haven't gotten the train yet, since the only way in there is activating the train.
Yeah.
But outside of that, you can actually, like, it's a fairly linear progression of powering up, and then you would only ever go back to just get your, if you have the right key now, you can get your puzzle.
I really wish that there was a visual indicator when one of them was going to be an individual specific one.
Oh, huh. Yeah, that was a big problem of you'd get to the Jam Jar's, his little silo, and he'd pop up and be like, nah, this one's just for the flea bag. Get out of here. And then you'd have to remember that flea bag actually refers to Kazooie, which got me once.
Yeah, that did get me once, too. I was like, wait, Kazooie is the flea bag?
Yeah.
Compared to a bear?
Is this just a British thing? Do they not have bears over there?
I don't know.
It was weird and very frustrating to go to the same guy 3 different ways just to get the ability to hatch an egg.
I imagine. Oh, that one in particular is funny.
Yeah.
That one I actually went to possibly the dumbest way I possibly could have.
Uh-huh.
I was keeping track because I had actually reached that on my first trip to the first level.
Okay.
I had been keeping track of the number of notes I needed and actually backtracked to it to get that.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, that was kind of weird and random. And then just like eventually went to Pterodactyl Land and was like, oh, there was a door right here that I opened on the other side and could have gotten it that way. Whoops.
Whoops. Sorry, bud. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It was just, it's just a weird way. I do like Jam Jars' little, like, rhyming couplets to describe what they do. Another way this game is British is that Zed actually is, like, the button Zed. They rhyme it as though it's Zed instead of Z.
Oh, that's lost on me.
Oh, yeah?
Well, because I'm on the Xbox, they actually mapped the buttons to the control, the Xbox controller.
Oh, no!
So, I don't remember.
Did they change the script?
Any. Yeah, I can't remember what the. If there were any rhymes that actually involved the button. I guess they must have changed it so that it wasn't press left trigger, then.
Maybe he's
press
just going.
B? I don't know.
Or maybe he's just getting more experimental with his poetry and no longer feels the need to rhyme. Who can say? But kind of going back to like the last little like collectible change in the first game, there's Mumbo tokens, and you need to get enough of them to get your transformation. And this one, to activate either Mumbo or Wumba, you just get this one critter called a Globo, one for each. And they were never not trivial to the extent that I just didn't understand why they existed in the first place.
Yeah. Like,
they start out inside the building.
There was maybe one that I didn't have for a significant portion of time. But the rest of them was like, yeah, this was literally inside the building, or it was behind the building, or yeah.
Across the way, and you can still hear it giggling from just standing in front of the building. Like, the most it is a room away, but it's also in the main chamber. So it's like, okay, it's still just kind of hanging out there. It was very strange.
So something I never tried was like getting one and then going to another area.
Oh, I did do that. It works. If you take a Globo from one zone and then go to the next world, you can use it there just fine. I actually, like, when I was going through Hailfire Peaks, I just put off using Mumbo because I just wanted to like know where everything was before transforming to him and doing everything all in one take. But I ended up getting enough Jiggies otherwise and just went to Cloud Cuckoo Land. And
fair.
I just had this spare Globo and I was curious. I'm like, all right, let's try it.
Yeah, I was applying a policy of trying to get as many Jiggies as I could figure out how to get before moving on.
Yeah, I mostly did that until the end.
So, like, there was some funny things that I ended up leaving until the very end of just, like, the snake in the first level.
Okay.
Apparently I had just failed to notice that there was a corner of it that wasn't the like loud ground.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I understand that I need to get up here and then sneak, but I don't know how to get up there without alerting him.
So like that one actually just triggered us like a sense memory from my childhood. I'm just like, oh right, I can do this. I remember exactly how. It's over here. And it worked, but yeah, it was one of those things where if I didn't know about sneaking, I might have just thought, like, I'll just come back later when I have, like, a sack ability.
Yeah.
Or something.
And I did try something weird.
Oh?
I think it would have worked if I had really good aim, but I did at one point try to use the clockwork eggs to try to get it.
Yeah, the clockwork eggs being, like, this little remote-controlled explosive buddy.
Yeah.
Which can collect things for you, but has no jump, but its ability is be small.
Yeah, my pet peeve with that is that it's hard to tell which place you need Banjo alone and which place you need a clockwork egg.
Yeah.
And there was a couple times, I think all in Cloud Cuckoo Land, actually, where I got to the thing with one only to find out that I needed the other one. I was like, ah, come on. What do you mean Banjo can't press buttons?
Yeah, and these are mutually exclusive. You cannot shoot an egg as Banjo, because Kazooie's the one with all the eggs.
Yeah.
And yeah, Cloud Cuckoo Land as just Banjo is a bit of a pain to get around.
Yes, yes it is.
You need to unlock a lot of things just for him to be able to get to the point where you can use his ability.
Yeah, actually that one was kind of funny. I got to the Pot of Gold without Mumbo, just because, like, I don't know, I was traveling as Kazooie and it was like, oh, I can just glide over there.
Yeah.
And so I was really confused as to what Mumbo's brain... I didn't make the connection that the rain would make the beans grow, because I also managed not to collect the beans until after that.
Oh, no.
So I spent a while being like, how do I make this work? I was like, oh, wait, the rain. That rain that did nothing the first time, because I had already gotten to the place where it allowed me to get to.
Like, this game has, like, the creators put in a lot of jokes. This was not a joke ability for Mumbo. They didn't just, like, yeah, useless rain, and it's also not related to putting water in the pterodactyl lands, that dinosaur who's thirsty.
Mm.
That one is just kind of an uncork a lake.
Yes. And the two ice cubes that you have to murder?
Yeah, I mean, you get a jiggy out of it.
What would you do for a jiggy, Eric?
You wouldn't download a jiggy. But yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, what else to really say about this game that's not just still, like, more complaining about specific ways it irked me.
Oh, yeah, we might be done there.
We could be done. In conclusion, as far as if it's a Metroidvania or not, no. Demonstrably no. I don't even... Not to bring up the sandwich thing again, but... None of the appeal of that type of game exists in this, and you just spend so much of your time doing basically everything else that just because it has elements does not make it...
Yeah, it's like, it's funny, because you're doing a lot of similar things, right? Like, you could try to make a kind of wacky comparison between collecting the jiggies and something like in Super Metroid collecting the energy tanks or missiles, right?
Yeah.
Those do have different purposes, right? Because you could low numbers run Metroid, you just need to get good, right?
Yeah, a lot of it is context and like what it means in the what it means in the context of the game itself. And for Banjo-Kazooie, it's like what you're doing is a lot of arbitrary activities in order to get a number high enough that you can go to another collection of activities.
So that you can get your numbers higher again.
Exactly. The fact that they're interconnected is just kind of... it sort of just happened that way. It doesn't really add anything interesting to how like the levels are designed. It's just, oh, that's neat that by doing this one thing in one level, it progressed in this other level. But like since you have to kind of do most of everything anyway, it's... This is the most arbitrary feeling game I've played in a while.
Yeah.
It is the most toy that a game has felt for me in quite some time. And that's kind of why I feel like it's aged poorly, is that I've aged at all and it just can't.
Yeah, which is interesting because some people talk about toys as things that are more open-ended. Like, I think some people consider something like Minecraft a toy.
Yeah. See, I think it's the difference between a sandbox and a Fisher-Price playset.
That's fair. You pull the pull string on Banjo-Tooie, and it says a thing, and it's, like, weird and kind of offensive now, and you're like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna put this...
Okay, we're not pulling that string anymore. And they only recorded three different lines. It's not a huge thing. I understand why it was charming back then, but I just cannot follow it anymore, and I think I'll leave Kazooie in the annals of history. Still have fond memories of that one. Played it through like 8 times, 100% as a kid, because you could do that back then. But I think we're going to put this one to bed and put it in the ground with our stack rank.
Oh, geez, we have to put this in the stack rank?
Very wild. For me personally, it's a very easy decision. It's basically one of those things where it's so close but not quite as bad as Xanadu, and it is not a Metroidvania for similar reasons of It has elements, and if you squint, you can kind of see it, but the actual act of playing it just does not scratch that itch. And it was kind of a miserable time playing it, gotta be honest.
That's fair. I mean, I found it, most of the time it wasn't miserable, but it was a chore, I guess.
It was a chore, and I started feeling like even the like mini games, I was kind of just like, okay, get through this so I don't have to do this again. Especially the ones where you have to do the same one three times with incrementing difficulty.
Oh, yeah.
It was just...
Yeah, that's a pain.
A lot of it was just like the pain started adding up and up, and the friction just started dragging a bit more and a bit more. It's like, by the end of it, I was just wanting to just play anything else. I'll play Legacy of the Wizard again. Fuck, why not?
Fair.
Yeah, that game kind of slapped in context. Like, this game is also a lot older than those, or a lot newer than those games.
I mean, so. I'm pretty sure we would hate Legacy of the Wizard if we didn't have save states.
Yeah, and I also had save states in this.
Yeah, I didn't have save states, and I didn't hate it that much. So,
okay.
I don't know.
I guess I'm the negative Nancy this time around.
I am still going to put it in the same spot, right at number okay. 14 above Xanadu. Below Yoku's Island Express, which, like,
okay, yeah.
Yoku's Island Express is a fine game. I feel like we were maybe a little harsh on putting it that low in the stack rank, but...
I think we were pretty harsh on it for being what it is, but I do have a lot more positive, like, feelings towards it.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah, there's an interesting gulf here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then speaking of playing Legacy of the Wizard again... I'm not trolling you by making you play Legacy of the Wizard again, but...
That'd be a really weird thing to start doing. Like, we already have so many games to actually, like, play that we haven't.
But I'm going to say that our next homework is to play a game that I think is somewhat similar to Legacy of the Wizard, but it's much more recent. Have you heard of Astalon?
Yes. This has the trio of, like, there's three different characters with different abilities.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I've heard of it, but nothing beyond that it exists and that there are three people. I think a lot of people compared it to Lost Vikings.
So, yeah, Astalon, Tears of the Earth. From what I understand, it's got sort of a Dark Souls-like checkpointing system, as in, like, when you die, you are going to start back at the bottom, and you're going to have to open shortcuts in order to get back to where you were exploring.
Okay, but we're actually back to something that you don't even have to make excuses to play as part of a Metroidvania podcast.
Yes.
Bold of you.
I mean, we gotta mix it up, right? You gotta go back and forth between old and new and, like, not really fitting in. And
you need to take chances, make mistakes, get messy.
Thanks, Miss Frizzle.
But all right, okay, next time, Astalon, Tears of the Earth. That's it for us. If you would like, follow us on social media at InvertedCastlep on Twitter. Send any questions, comments, concerns, or, you know, just want to chat, send it to InvertedCastlePodcast@gmail.com. Outside of that, I think that's all our socials now that Facebook's going
away. I mean, Facebook's still there. It just doesn't automatically post there anymore.
Okay. Well, yeah, we still have a Facebook page. You know, do the needful. But yeah, that's been it for me. I've been Eric Fox.
And I've been Thomas Blight.
And it is true, you cannot go back again.